Most people live on a lonely island, lost in the middle of a foggy sea. Most people long for another island, one where they know they would like to be. Bali High may call you any night, any day. In your heart
when South Pacific opened on Broadway in 1949, it was a big hit, winning 9 Tony Awards and the Pulitzer Prize for Drama. But surprisingly, it's never been revived on Broadway until now. In his review in the New York Times, Ben Brantley said, "I know we're not supposed to expect perfection in this imperfect world, but I'm darned if I can find one serious flaw in this production." South Pacific is playing at the Vivian Beaumont Theater at Lincoln Center, and joining me now are the director of the hit revival, Bartlett Scherr, and Loretta Obles Sayer, who plays Bloody Mary. Welcome to the show.
Aloha, thank you.
Thanks. There have been revivals in London, but never one on Broadway. Isn't that surprising, especially given all of the wonderful songs in it that have made their way into the Great American Songbook?
I have no idea why it was never revived. I could speculate that I think it's a very big show, you know, so it might have been, you know, it's 40 people in the cast and it's got a large orchestra. And I think it's always been difficult to cast well, mm-hmm. you know, find somebody who could really play all those parts. And it was such an indelible experience in 49 that I think people were a little bit, you know, scared of it.
But were you involved in the casting?
Oh, yes. It took 14 months of my life casting it.
And Loretta, didn't you respond to an open call for the part of Bloody
Mary?
Yes,
I did, in Honolulu, and almost didn't go because I really thought that the possibility of me getting a role in a Broadway show coming from Hawaii was about as nil as it could be.
But you're well known in Hawaii.
Oh, well, yes, but anywhere past King Street, no one knows who I am there.
Yeah, well, people have island fever in Hawaii because you get stuck there,
right.
and it's really hard to get out.
Right.
But have you been surprised by just how positive the reaction to the show
has been? Flabbergasted. We just cannot believe it. It's so amazing to be a part of a show that moves people. And, you know, recently we were out collecting for the Broadway Cares Equity Fights AIDS, and there would be person after person leaving the theater sobbing, just wanting to grab onto somebody to say thank you for, you know, a magical evening, and they'd never seen a production like this ever before, and it was really, really touching.
Had you seen Juanita Hall's performance as Bloody Mary in the film version?
Yes, I have.
It is said that Richard Rodgers wrote the melody for Bali High in 5 minutes.
it's
kind of magical.
Yeah, possible. I think it's possible.
Well, these songs, they are all magical, aren't they?
They're incredible, yeah. I mean, I think that Loretta's being a little modest. When you say an open call, that means that there was a bunch of people in some place in Diamond Head Little Theater who were brought into a room where we put them all on tape because we were having trouble really making sure we had looked everywhere for a great Bloody Mary. And then we watched
and you thought Hawaii would be a good place.
Yes, absolutely. Well, Hawaii's famous for having some amazing singers, and there's a certain sound in the script that you hear that, you know, and I have relatives from Hawaii, so I knew there were some people that could, we should look.
And the people are Polynesian.
Yeah, Polynesian, and so, and central, you know, Asian, the Asian rim kind of area, but then we looked at the tape, and Loretta stuck out from a large group of people and then brought her to New York and put her through all these auditions where I think her head was spinning until Mrs. Rogers and Mrs. Hammerstein said it was okay for her to do the part, which was kind of nice.
Well, you do seem perfect for the part.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
How do you think Bloody Mary sees the soldiers that she sells her wares to? Are they just customers to her?
I think they're a way for her to make a quick buck right away. I mean, obviously, she's lived on this island without them for many years, trying to make a living and raising this child ostensibly by herself. And all of a sudden, the soldiers are there, and she's got things to sell, and she's got money to make, but she also knows they're not always going to be there.
And we see something really interesting, because it's obvious that she sees herself as superior to them on some level, and they see themselves as superior to her, and they even have a song
right.
making fun of Bloody Mary.
Right, but they're wrong. Right. So she has the power and the independence to go toe-to-toe with these soldiers. She knows how to handle them. She knows how to make a buck off of them. But she ultimately is in control of her life.
Now, are you an actress first and a singer second, or vice versa?
Singer first, mm-hmm. actor second.
But because this does require real acting, serious
right.
acting.
Exactly. And so then I have to, you know, turn it over to Bart, because anything that I've done in my performance, I have to say he's the one that saw it and brought it out.
Yeah, but it was even clear from her tape. I mean, the wonderful thing about Loretta is she's not afraid to not be pretty. You know, she's not afraid to really...
The way she walks.
Yeah, I mean, she's not afraid to be rough and raw and, you know, strong-willed. And, you know, these parts are very hard because you have to really be willing to not be... an attractive presence when you're struggling that hard at the edge of poverty in some foreign land. It's a very strong thing to fill, and she was completely fearless.
Now, this is the third production you've done at Lincoln Center Theater. You directed Awake and Sing and then Light in the Piazza, which also starred Kelly O'Hara. Did you think of her immediately when you were casting the part of Ensign Nellie Forbush?
Actually, the process was a little different than that. We really were very concerned about figuring out who we could get to play Emile Debeck, because the original, in the book, Emile Debeck's only 44, but when they wrote it for Pinza, when they adjusted it for Pinza, they had a much older man. So we sort of looked all over the world for opera singers who would be willing and capable and ready to come and do the part. And once Paolo was very clearly in the picture, it narrowed the search. Kelly was always really at the top of the list, but we didn't know if we'd had a much, much, much older Emile, it might have had an impact on how we were looking at casting.
Although it is odd that the two men who played Debeck haven't been French, even they've.
I know. Well, what are you going to do?
But you know, they both had glorious voices, and I'd never heard of Paolo Zot before, but yeah. I think everybody knows him now.
They
it's just an
him,
amazing.
Yeah.
Voice. He's a Brazilian opera singer.
Yeah, Brazilian opera singer who, you know, was working his way up in the opera world and sort of having a growing career. And that, you know, that made him more possible. The more established singers, it's a very big change in their lives. What Pinza did at the time was pretty revolutionary, to leave his opera career to do something on Broadway. And even now, when we were looking at some of the highly established opera singers, it's a big experience for them to come into the theater.
Well, Pinza is legendary in all sorts of ways, and one of them is that he, as an opera singer, he wasn't ready to do as many shows in a week. This takes a major commitment. It also takes knowing how to act, and opera singers maybe do have the advantage today because they are expected to act a lot more than they used to.
Yeah, I mean, he comes in that part line of opera singers of like Don Giovanni's, and so he probably had the predilection to being a very, very charming and winning leading man. He certainly knew that part of the acting. They wrote it particularly for 15 minutes of music so that he would be capable of doing it 8 times a week.
His contract, wasn't
it? Yeah, it was in his contract, but also they were very careful about how much singing it really required.
Was that why Some Enchanted Evening and This Almost Was Mine had to be such big songs?
I don't know.
Because if you're doing 15 minutes, you don't want to do any throwaways.
No, there was no... I think they had those songs long before. No, they didn't have This Nearly Was Mine before that. They wrote that for him, more likely. But Some Enchanted Evening they had early on, and they knew it was a great song.
And This Almost Was Mine is a waltz, something that Richard Rodgers seemed to love to do. And in the performance I saw, it was a showstopper. Even more than Some Enchanted Evening.
From the
which,
first performance,
right.
They've gone insane when they hear that song. It's a very moving,
it's gorgeous.
Powerful thing. Yeah.
But you have to wonder about why Richard Rodgers, I guess, whenever he wanted to do something special, went to the waltz.
I don't know. Yeah, you know, that I can't answer. But and apparently it came pretty late in the process of their writing. You know, they came upon it in a while, and like all these things, he says that he would write them quickly, but it would be in his head for a year before he wrote it, and then suddenly it would come out in 5 minutes.
My guests are Bartlett Sher, director of the new production of South Pacific at Lincoln Center, the Vivian Beaumont, and Loretta Ablasser, who plays Bloody Mary. And there's a full orchestra. You mentioned that. It has this wonderful full sound. We don't hear that much on Broadway anymore because of the economics. Was it really because the score is so important for this show?
Yeah.
Gotten away with it? Synthesizers and...
No, that was something that Lincoln Center and Andre Bishop, who's the artistic director of Lincoln Center, were very committed to right off the top. We were going to do a 30-person orchestra with the original orchestrations and, you know, really make sure that that was a big part of the show. So that was a given. That was part of the given rules of what we were doing right off the top.
And you've even added a song, My Girl Back Home, which was taken out of the original.
Yeah, one of the things that was a kind of pleasure about doing the show was that the Rodgers and Hammerstein Foundation made available to us the original script that they were in rehearsal with in 48. And in that script, there was a lot of stuff that we found quite interesting, almost all of it around race. You know, there's some there's a reference to colored and other things, which I think they were either nervous. They were either nervous about time or they're nervous about it being a bit too much. And there was a song that was in the second act, My Girl Back Home, which was it didn't belong there, and they cut it. It was always a favorite of Mary Martin's. But it seemed more appropriate. We moved it into the first act, and it helps build the relationship between Cable and Nellie Forbush.
And it's interesting that some shows really are stuck in their time, trapped in their time. Annie, Get Your Gun was a real problem in a revival. But this has all these subjects that are still relevant today: race, war, duty.
It's completely extraordinary. It's in fact, what's even more amazing is recently Andre Bishop had told me that one of the things they recently discovered is that in 1948, when they were writing it, was during the Democratic Convention. People have wondered, well, why did they write Have to Be Carefully Taught, and why was there so much of this subject there? But in 1948 was when Hubert Humphrey made a major speech at the Democratic Convention about race, and it was the first time it was put into the platform of the Democratic Convention. And Strom Thurmond, the Dixiecrats, were fighting it. So it was in all of the papers at the time. And we kind of forget, coming back around with Barack Obama running and all that, how much these issues are a part of our country. And this musical is very much got all that in it.
Did you feel that you needed to explain some of these issues more to today's audiences, like the way Nellie Forbush reacts when she discovers that Emile's two children's mother was a Polynesian?
I don't think we need to explain it. I think we were able to be a little bit braver about it, in the sense that they were dealing in totally new territory, so the boundaries of what they could say and not say were probably very new. And so they were testing those boundaries. And now when we look at it, it's shocking and amazing for Kelly to be able to be these, to really show these sides of Nellie Forbush that were in the writing and in Americans at the time and then change.
Now, it's also, the Beaumont is a huge stage. Does that cause staging problems?
And no, it gives staging joys. I mean, the thing
about
the
Beaumont,
you have
to cover a lot of space.
The thing about a thrust like that, though, is it's a bit of a trick because, in fact, as big as it is, you're really only about 40 feet from any of the major action at any point because of it being a thrust. So it has that great capacity to be both incredibly epic and really intimate at the same time.
And then there's that other thing, which is the orchestra is under the thrust rather than in a pit. And I don't know what that feels like for you, Loretta, to be singing over the music that's coming out.
It's amazing.
Well,
it comes out from underneath and then wraps around us. So it's beautiful, absolutely beautiful to perform with.
Both of your feature songs, Bally High and Happy Talk, are songs of seduction, aren't they?
Right.
And
right.
They're both directed at Lieutenant Joe Cable, the man that Bloody Mary hopes will take her daughter to America.
Or marry her and stay there and take care of her and ultimately love her, I think is the real hope that she has. I think she wants her daughter to be taken care of because Bloody Mary is not going to be living a long, long life. And this is the most precious
being. Not if she's all
being.
Those beetle nuts.
Exactly. And she works all night long. You know, when we went back to Tales of the South Pacific by James Michener, it mentions how she's in the bushes in the middle of the night. It's almost like she doesn't sleep. She's working. She's selling things to the sailors. And so she's not going to live a long, long life. And she has this daughter that she loves, and she wants to make sure that she's taken care of. And if Cable will just allow himself to love her the way that he obviously does, then Mary knows her daughter will be taken care of and loved.
Now, I read the Tales of the South Pacific when I was a teenager, which was a while back. And one of the things I remembered was Bloody Mary and those beetle nuts. And That, because that's something I had to learn. I didn't know what betel nuts were, and I didn't know why anybody chewed on them. But did you all go back to the original material, to the Michener stories?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We spent a lot of time with the original material.
How much has been changed in the transition to the musical?
Oscar Hammerstein and Josh Logan, who was the director and writer together, did this kind of amazing quilt adaptation where they took from all these stories and made one story. We haven't changed that at all. We've just tried to make it... You know, what's beautiful about that book is it's... And the entire experience of this, now that we look back, is you have this experience of American military power overseas encountering this strange world. And this collision is something that since then, with Korea and Vietnam and Iraq, is a big part of our culture, but then was a very new thing. And it brings this Bally Highness, you know, into our culture. And it was fun to go back and explore that and look at that.
How is that work the other way for you, Loretta? I mean, there has to be a certain amount of culture clash coming from Hawaii. Honolulu is a big city, but it's not New York.
Oh, absolutely.
You had your first subway ride today?
I had my first subway ride this trip to go anywhere, because I'm absolutely paranoid to get on the subway. I'm really bad with directions in the first place, but then you put me underground and I go into
shock.
It's
still the fastest way to get around.
That's what I understand, but, you know, I'd be better leaving my house 2 hours early and catching a cab and paying $1,000.
What about 8 shows a week?
That's a challenge. That's really a challenge to learn how to pace yourself and bring yourself up every single night to the same level of energy and excitement to a brand new audience every single night. But I'm loving that.
And is it different every night? Or do you find that the same songs have the same kind
of
impact?
Well, both. You challenge yourself to bring the same best quality that you can. But for the life of the character and your interaction with the other characters, you want to be able to find something that both of you can feed off of.
When the show opened, it was for a limited run. Now it's an open run?
Yeah, that's, you know, there's an old saying, there's only one thing worse than a flop.
So you'll be living in New York for a while,
right.
I suspect, Loretta.
It's a lot of work. It's a very big adjustment for people, you know. I mean, the idea, I think people don't understand how unbelievably disciplined and hardworking actors are, you know, to be bringing that experience freshly to people every night and do that. And now that we're an open-ended run and people have to plan their lives out and really think about doing this for a long time, it's a big commitment for everybody.
And then you had to record the cast album.
Right.
That must have been fun.
That was fabulous. That was fabulous in this huge room with, did we have a 40-piece orchestra?
Yeah, they added 10 more pieces, so it was
right.
Even more lush,
even
more beautiful.
And so there's a lot of stress to be able to sing the song correctly, but then I think we were all kind of affected by the idea that we're doing this recording for posterity, that for years to come, when people refer to this cast, they'll refer to this cast recording and how honored we all were to be a part of that.
And what about you, Bartlett? You're on to directing a production of Romeo et Juliet?
Yes, in Salzburg, yeah.
Another story of star-crossed lovers.
Another story. Yes, that's true. Yes, with lots of duets. Yeah, it can be fun. I mean, it's a little bit kind of hard to believe that, you know, I'm going to be directing at the Salzburg Festival, and we're in that same space where the Sound of Music ends, so it's kind of a little magical experience.
I wonder about the two of you. One of you from Honolulu, the other one from Seattle, both of you here. When do you decide to move to New York?
Well, probably pretty soon.
Because you've been doing so much work here.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in the middle. I run a theater in Seattle, and I go back and forth between the two, and I have a family, and so it's always intense. So it's always one of those things I'm trying to evaluate and judge for both of us. She's going to be living here for a while. She's no choice, and I'm definitely in transition.
And Loretta, you'll take the subway again, I'm sure.
I'm sure I will, with someone holding my hand.
I want to thank you so much for being with us. We're going to go out with some Enchanted Evening, because people should really hear that voice, Paul Zot. It's unbelievable.
Oh, he's fabulous.
And my great thanks to the two of you, Bartlett Scherr, who's the director of this new production of South Pacific, and Loretta Ablissaire, who plays Bloody Mary. It's at the Vivian Beaumont Theater at Lincoln Center. And if you need to find out about tickets, you can go to lct.org or call 212-239-6200.
come and gently leave me. You may see a stranger. You may see a stranger across a crowded room, and somehow you know. Somewhere you see her.